are the stories that you should probably know about today.
It took a long time to bring the United States to its senses. I was able to do it because I had, I don't want to say thousands, but close to 1,000 hours on American television.
Is that for real?
That is for real. He's showing enslaved people.
Yes.
Oh my God. The man is a war criminal.
We should not normalize Russia. We should not let them back at the table.
We must double down our efforts regarding sanctions and restrictive measures.
Is it just me or is the world going crazy? The effect will affect you. This is it. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. You know, it's interesting. First of all, I want to thank you for being there. Millions of you have been joining us every week, and we certainly appreciate you being there. You know how crazy angry people get in the United States when you or I or anybody in any way trifles with the image of the Holocaust, even if it's just an accident? Happens all the time, right? If you use Hitler's name, for example, when you're making a comparison, you get called out as an anti-Semite. Can't talk about Hitler, right? You lose your job. Why? Because you're not giving his cruelty its due. And there's a point to be made about that. But how far do you take it, right? Nothing can compare, they say. So don't go there. Got that. Here's another one. Don't trifle with the Holocaust. Don't talk about the Holocaust. Don't use it to make ever a comparison to anything else, because nothing can compare. Don't make fun of it, because it was horrible. And by the way, they're right. It was horrible, right? But what happens when the very people who attack others for doing something like that, for making a mistake possibly, do it themselves? By the way, point of emphasis here, they don't just call people who say something wrong anti-Semites. Oh, no, they go much worse. They don't just call you a name. I know, because it's happened to me. They will destroy you. If you're in America and you say the wrong thing, they will destroy you. They will make sure you never work again. They will use the media, much of which they own, and the politicians, many of whom they bribe legally, to make sure that that happens, to make sure that you're kaput, done. You think I'm kidding? You think this is conjecture on my part? I'm exaggerating about the control? You think I'm exaggerating this influence because I was once personally affected by it? Okay, then. Don't take my word for it. Listen instead to this guy, who I'm about to play for you, who essentially says the same thing. And by the way, this guy has a hell of a lot more credibility talking about this than I do. Here, check him out.
It took a long time to bring the United States to its senses. I was able to do it because I had, I don't want to say thousands, but close to 1,000 hours on American television, with the ability to influence the United States, with the intimate recognition of all its leaders, both those who support us and those who do not, and the ability to navigate this field like few can.
He is literally bragging about controlling the media. If he was in the United States and he said that, he'd be fired from his job. But here he is saying it. He's the Prime Minister of Israel, bragging about how he has thousands of times I can appear on the media whenever I want. He can, by the way, right? And about his control of politicians. He bragged about that as well, right? About his influence. But if you think that's bad, let me go back to my main point that I started a little while ago about the people who are being called anti-Semites, right? Let's talk about the pain that that has caused when somebody is accused of something like that, right? The humiliation that is forced on people for simply saying something wrong, for example. They may be talking about the Holocaust. And especially if you're a comedian and you make fun of the Holocaust, for example, or use it in a video, for example, or anything having to do with concentration camps, right? I mean, you're really going to get cooked if you do something like that. We know. We've seen it happen. So with that in mind, I want you now to watch this video. This was just put out. And it's put out by Bibi Netanyahu's own security minister. This is the top security guy in all of Israel. Watch this video that was just put out by Ben Gavir. It's kind of sick. I think. Watch. Can you imagine? He's literally making fun of Palestinians and making it look like they're all going into a concentration camp. Do you know what would happen if somebody did that and made fun of people and used concentration camps as a background in the United States? That person would be fired the next day. If they had a job in the media or if they had a job in government, they would be the lead story for a month on cable news. Maybe longer, right? But this guy, Ben-Gvir, an Israeli, no problem. Double standard, fair. By the way, I want you to see something now. I watched this last night. I wanted to share it with you because I always try to follow certain people. Jeffrey Sachs is one of those people I follow. Watch the reaction of Jeffrey Sachs. He's one of the most respected geopolitical analysts in the entire planet. And watch his, he hadn't seen this video. Suddenly, I think it was Judge Knapp, Judge Napolitano, good guy, plays it for him. Watch his reaction live.
He's that for real?
That is for real. He's showing enslaved people.
For real?
Yes.
Oh, my God. The man is a war criminal. I'm absolutely, I shouldn't be shocked. The vulgarity of that, I mean, if you told me that is an AI-generated spoof, not a spoof, whatever, a fraud, I'd believe it. But if that's actually something that is being portrayed in Israeli politics, fine. Let the American politicians finally break free of the complicity in genocide. Understand that, look at that, and stop.
And stop. You know, Sachs is right to react that way. There's no question about it. But let me say something else here, to be fair, because I think it's important to be fair. Not all Jews think or behave like Ben-Gvir. In fact, history is replete with prominent Jews who've stood against what Israel has become. In fact, many of them predicted that Israel would probably become this because the way it was, because of the, how it was set up. You know, here's BitChute's Jeffrey Wernick, friend of mine, explaining how even some of the original founders of Zionism and others who came after them saw this coming.
Ahad Aham went to the Jewish colonies in Palestine in 1891, 6 years before the first Zionist Congress. He wrote that the settlers had been slaves in exile and now acted like masters, that they treat the Arabs with hostility and cruelty, beat them without reason, and brag about it. Those are his words. In 1913, he wrote, "If this be the Messiah, I do not wish to see his coming." He founded Cultural Zionism. He saw it before the movement had an organization. Edwin Montagu, the only Jew in the British cabinet, wrote a memorandum against the Balfour Declaration in 1917. He titled it, "The Anti-Semitism of the Present Government." He called Zionism a mischievous political creed and said it would make Jews aliens in every country they lived in. Freud was asked in 1930 to sign a statement condemning the Arab riots. He refused. He wrote that he did not think Palestine could ever become a Jewish state and that the baseless fanaticism of our people was partly to blame for the Arab distrust. The man who asked him wrote on the letter, "Do not show this to foreigners." Judah Magnus, the first chancellor of Hebrew University, published an essay in 1930 called "Like All the Nations?" His answer was no. Einstein in New York, 1938. He said he would much rather see agreement with the Arabs than a Jewish state, and he warned of the inner damage Judaism would sustain from a narrow nationalism within our own ranks. In 1952, he turned down the presidency of Israel.
Einstein, pretty smart guy, right? Talk about an understatement. The takeaway here is that, look, there have always been smart and courageous men and women who are willing to stand up and tell the truth. But we got to listen. We got to help them. And speaking of smart and courageous people, let's go back to Jeffrey Sachs with a warning that he gives. Here's some advice that he has for all Americans on what to do this November. Listen.
I would say to the American people, in November, vote for candidates who say that they are for peace, to stop funding the Israeli murder machine, to stop funding this horrendous war in Ukraine, which is doing nothing but destroying Ukraine because we keep it going rather than negotiate a peace which has been available all along. Remember, Judge, I spoke to Biden's national security advisor at the end of 2021, and I said, negotiate. He said, don't worry, Jeff, there's not going to be a war. That's wow. Jake Sullivan. These right. people are incompetent, and I would like the American people to vote against the warmongers.
To vote against the warmongers, he said. But here's the problem. Aren't the warmongers in control right now? I mean, and by the way, this is not just a problem that we have here. I'm going to show you where this problem is as well. It's in Europe. Yeah, it's in Europe. And this that I have behind me here is going to come into play in just a minute, because this is something that's taking place here in America as well. The problem is actually worse, though, in Europe, where they're saying the very opposite of those words that we just heard from Jeffrey Sachs. See, to them, this is weird, man, but for the Europeans, it has seemed to me that wars are good as long as they are profitable and as long as they hurt their enemies. Yeah, you see that right there? There they are in Kiev, celebrating Zelensky and encouraging him to continue bombing Russia. Those are the leaders of the UK, Finland, Luxembourg, Moldova, Lithuania, Denmark, Estonia, all coming to kiss the ring of the little man. It's a crazy image, isn't it? And listen to what they had to say. Take a listen.
We should not normalize Russia. We should not let them back at the table.
We need to stop Russia launching missiles in the first place with sanctions that cut off their military supply chains and support for Ukraine's long-range campaign.
I cannot say better than you did about the necessity to increase the fight against Shadow Fleet. It's efficient. And we must double down our efforts regarding sanctions and restrictive measures and strengthen our coordination.
And we can see that now in the sense that 65% of the Russian population wants to end this war. And, you know, hitting logistics centers like Wildberries increases it with an additional 10%. So if your question is, do I think this is sensible military strategy from Ukraine? My answer is, yes, it certainly is.
Yes, it certainly is. You heard him right, right? Bombing online warehouses that stock goods for consumers, which, by the way, these warehouses have nothing to do with the military, killing civilians who may be there or working there, that's a good military strategy. That's what he just said, a good military strategy. Those are Europe's strongmen. They're mostly bankers or heavily tied to bankers and military contractors. And they make a lot of money from this war with Ukraine. So it's no wonder that they want this war on Russia to continue. Because, by the way, they also hate Russia. They just do. And that's nothing new. We spent, like, what, an hour yesterday talking about this on the show with some historians? Yeah, this is historical. And it's also irrational. It can be both. So, I mean, look, just think about this. How do you refuse to talk to a country? First of all, I would say you shouldn't refuse to talk to any country. But, my God, no less Russia? The largest country in the entire world. It's like 12% of the entire world is Russia. Oh, yeah. I don't see them. Where are they? Russia? What Russia? Come on. I mean, and that gets us to really, I mean, sorry, but it's just sometimes when things are so irrational, I can't help but almost want to make fun of it. That gets us to probably the biggest development in the news over the last 24 hours, and it's this. Less than a week after the U.S.'s top intel guy appeared in Moscow, Russia's top finance guy just appeared in the United States, here at the G20 summit, right? That's taking place no less in North Carolina. Anton Silyanov arrived at the G20, had a meeting with the U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. And how did the Europeans react? Oh, my God. Blew their minds. They became so angry, so incensed. They didn't even want to be in the same room with this guy. Wouldn't have taken a picture with him, walked the other way when they'd see him. I mean, it's like the guy, Silyanov, here, we got, see him right there? That's me and him together. He's one of the smartest guys in Russia. I've interviewed him. I found him to be a reasonable guy, an accomplished guy, tells interesting stories. This is the guy who's guided Russia through a torment of sanctions and freezes, and still somehow Russia arguably is the most sanctioned, the most castigated economically country in the history of the world. And yet their economy right now is healthier than most European economies. Some would say thanks to this guy right there. You'd think they'd want to talk to him, maybe ask him a couple of questions. You can hate him and still talk to him. Europeans avoided this guy like the plague. They wouldn't even allow themselves to be in the same area, the same room. Like I said, they wouldn't even take a picture with him. Now, you know, what does that say about them? Joining us now to talk about this, thanks so much for being here.
Absolutely.
I'm so happy that you're here. This is Anne Vandersteel. She's on Rumble. Safe to say she's followed by tons of people. Why? Because she's one of the clearest voices challenging the official narrative on Ukraine, Russia, and the global power structures that make it happen. Gosh, it's so nice of you to come in. You know, I thought you were going to be by satellite when they said, no, she's coming in to sit next to you. I was like so excited.
Yeah, this is great. Thank you for having me.
What do you make of the way the Europeans freaked out about Silyanov's presence in North Carolina? Let's suppose they don't like Russia. Let's suppose they hate Russia. But to, like, run away from the guy and not even be in the same room with him and not take your picture with him?
It's indicative of the big problem which is underpinning all of Europe. And frankly, it's a problem for the United States. It's the fact that we, again, attached to a central banking system which is under-collateralized, bankrupt, in other words. We printed our currency into an oblivion, and they're looking to collateralize. And Russia sits up there. Let's look at the Arctic Circle, the conversations we're having right now about trade. If the Arctic is really melting, that's going to make more shipping lanes, and it's going to challenge their ability to have control of routes and resources, which is what this war in Ukraine is about, which is what this war in Iran is about. It's about maintaining global dominance, and they're watching it whittle away. They don't want to see us go from a unipolar world order into a multipolar world order underpinned by real world assets.
But you know, sometimes you got to just, you know, you got to look at the facts, right?
Yeah.
You can't just say, well, for example, I'd like to only drive for the rest of my life a Rolls Royce, but I can't afford a Rolls Royce, you know?
Right.
But I'd like to, you know, I'd like to be the king of the world, but I can't be the king of the world. So this idea that we own the world and we're just not going to have it any other way and we're going to continue to own the world, you know, it goes against the facts out there. It goes against the number of people who are in the standing armies of India and Russia and China. It goes against the GDPs. It goes against the GDP to debt ratio of Russia compared to the United States and every other damn Western country. So after a while, you got to look at the scoreboard and say, damn, we're losing by 3 touchdowns. What are we going to do? As opposed to just going out and saying, no, we're winning. You're not winning.
No, they've lost. I think it's the realization now, Rick, is that the world has woken up to the fact that the central bank companies have lost the narrative. We are not in control the way they think that we are, the way that they project that we are. And this is where Europe is coming to that, oh, my gosh, moment. We have lost this narrative, and we are losing this war, and the central bank system has collapsed, and the United States has got to make a very difficult decision here. We're talking about putting fiat on a blockchain right now. If you look at stablecoins backed by treasuries, backed by dollars, backed by what? Nothing. Until we get to real-world assets, which is where BRICS has really excelled. They are using real-world assets to back their basket of currency so that they can actually trade. And when you have real-world assets backing your currencies, trade becomes free and fair. And what do you not have in that environment? War. And where do you see war originating from? Those countries that are still pushing fiat. And now we're talking about kicking the can down the road with fiat on the blockchain using Genius and Clarity. Unless we come to Jesus, essentially, and back our fiat with real-world assets, fiat on the blockchain is still fiat. And so I think this is the big shift we're seeing. And make no bones about it, I believe President Trump is well aware of that. Look at the NDAAs that were signed in 2017 around the real world assets here in this country. It's just doing a dance
right now.
You know,
I'm going to stop you for a minute just to say that I give the guy credit. He's screwed up so many things, it's ridiculous. But I give the guy credit for going in with a basic understanding that at least most of the other guys who preceded him did not have.
Right.
I think his instinct is correct on this. The
execution.
Economy.
Yes. Yeah,
I agree. He can't execute it.
Yeah,
and he can't pull it off.
That's the problem I see is in the execution. When you're
why can't he pull it off?
Well, he's surrounding himself by people that are still beholden to the central bank system, the City of London. I mean, look at what Scott Bessent did, right? And now you're bringing it home here, and he's talking about stablecoin and basically offloading the debt of the United States through treasuries on the rest of the world by making treasury a U.S. stablecoin available to anybody and everybody, not just one sovereign that can scuttle the ship.
Yeah.
Japan is in trouble. Iran is obviously holding a big card for us right now. But Japan looking at probably liquidating treasuries, China liquidating treasuries, is very problematic for the United States because that is our debt that is going to drive our interest rates. When it comes to refinancing our debt, interest rates skyrocketing is bad. If you can offload that debt ratio into the rest of the world, pushing out, you know, a couple of $1 trillion in stablecoin, they think that maybe they can stabilize the debt interest rates.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, I'm if you have some people who you've always kind of owned and you don't like them and they're your neighbors, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it comes to the point when those neighbors eventually have as much power as you, maybe have a bigger lawn, maybe have more money, doesn't it behoove you to go knock on the door and say, hey, let's see if we can work something out?
100%.
Because why do we, obviously my question is, why do we treat China and Russia and Iran and all these other countries like they're just little kids who need to be scolded rather than respected?
I could not agree with you more. I had this conversation with Brandon Strock just the other day, talking about influencers who are attacking him because he's platforming people who are antithetical to the walkaway movement, to the Make America Great, to America First. You have to talk to these people because if you're not trying to find common ground, look, let's face it, we're on this earth to be free people. Our country was the only country that ever codified that with our Bill of Rights and did it beautifully so. We're straying so far from that. And to push this narrative out there, even coming from this administration, that if you're not with this administration, you're not with Trump, you're anti-American. That's simply not true.
Yeah.
Our entire First Amendment is the premise based on that we're allowed to have these conversations because, let's face it, you may like pizza and I may like steak, but
yeah.
I'm not going to eat pizza 6 nights of the week and you're not going to eat steak, but we'll find a way to maybe share and come together so we don't starve. And that's essentially what we're being challenged with right now on the global scale. We have to figure out how we can extend free and fair trade. And a lot of times it's a compromise, and sanctioning countries into an oblivion only forces them to figure out how to exist without your country. And that's what Russia has done after being kicked off SWIFT. They're existing beautifully without the SWIFT network.
This guy Solyanov, I told you, I met with him. And, you know, it's funny, at one point I joked with him. I said, well, what happened with McDonald's? I mean, it was an American company. He said, I'm going to invite you, and we're going to go eat one of their cheeseburgers, and you're going to find that we make them better now.
That's right.
But all of these companies that we left there, I mean, you go down the list, McDonald's and Burger King and all these great American companies, and the Russians loved American companies.
That's right.
And we just said, no, we're so angry at you, we're just going to leave the money there and let you take it. And the Russians are like, okay, thank you for the business. Isn't that crazy?
I mean,
who makes these stupid kind of decisions like that? We're Americans. We should be, if there's 150 million Russians, and they're good consumers, by the way,
right.
We should be selling them all the crap we have so they can buy it.
That's exactly right. Instead, we're going to tariff and sanction them so that they can't. And it only punishes the people that are actually making their products, to which Americans aren't making really much of anything anymore. And that, again, is offshoring. And that was the policies of cheap dollars overseas. And all these things that we've done, you know, really, frankly, it got much worse after 1971. Thank you, Kissinger, and the administrations that listened to him. If we don't reverse that course, and we're going to be forced into it because the dollar is at 3 cents now. So we are being forced into course reversal. It's whether or not the administration will look and listen cleanly to companies that are actually selling and transmitting, I should say, facilitating the exchange of real-world assets on exchanges where you can't steal, you can't have financial instruments that are selling things that they don't have actual control of. Look at what's happening with COMEX. People are liquidating silver out of there like it's a house fire right now. Are they going to have failure to delivers? Is that a real threat? But this is what Americans have right now. We have failure to delivers on our national security, on our elections, on our food supply, on our health care, and on and on and on. Why? Because we allowed a cheap currency to offshore all of this overseas. That's a big problem. That's a national security threat.
How much did that have to do with the war in Ukraine And I ask that in particular because it just when I see what you're saying when it comes to our country as Americans. But when it comes to the Europeans, it goes beyond that. It's almost like this antithetical, historical antithesis of the Russian people. They just hate them. Yeah. They think they're dirty Slavs. And they don't want anything to do with them. And they're going to punish them and hurt them and break them up and destroy them. What? Is that crazy? I mean, I know those words are coming out of my mouth and they sound crazy, but that's what I get when I hear these people talk.
Yeah, it is crazy to hear you say it, not because you're crazy, but because people actually are operating in that fashion. But I think you have to go back and you have to look historically, and I'm talking thousands of years, go back to 1067 AD, the original Silk Road that was coming across from China through the Middle East and on up into Europe and, of course, started the city of London. You had a group that became known as they were called the Radhanites, and they were sort of a mix of a lot of people from China all the way through Middle East, all the way through into Europe. They then became known as the Ashkenazi Jews, and those are the group of people that are running, not the biblical Hebrews. I heard you talk about this on an earlier segment. These are the Ashkenazi Jews that really are sort of, they're the gypsies, they're the metamorph, they become what they want you to believe they are. They are chameleons, in other words, and they started the central city of London, the central banking system. They invoked usury, which was highly illegal. Mm-hmm. And today, that's who's running Israel, and that's who's running Ukraine. And this is the war, because you've got these NATO-allied countries that are beholden to that central banking system that are going to stand in the face of people that stand against it. Solidly, Russia is opposite of that entire philosophy of banking, et cetera. And again, getting kicked off our system was really not that big a deal. Look at the neighbors in the GDP and the SCO, sorry, in the BRICS and the SCO that are working hand in glove to supply what they need.
To a certain extent, I think Putin did something in the late 1990s that I wish our presidents would do. He basically looked at some of those people that you just described and said, get the hell out of here.
That's right.
You're not paying your taxes. You're cheating your workers. You're taking more than you deserve.
That's right.
You either start doing it right or I'm sending you to jail. Many of them did. Mm-hmm. Or he kicked the rest out. And by the way, they're all in Israel today.
That's right.
And some in the United States.
Right.
And I'm not necessarily saying that they were Jewish or anything like that, because that would not be correct. But there was a certain preponderance of people who took advantage of Russia when Russia stopped being the Soviet Union, and instead of helping the Russians, they basically stole from Russia. And when Putin became wise to that, he acted on it, which is to this day why 80% of the people in Russia kind of like the guy. And a lot of people don't like him, and a lot of people criticize him, but that's the one thing they thought he did. I'm kind of thinking, Ann, we need presidents who do this. We need somebody to stand up to these guys who don't pay taxes in our country and are trillionaires. No?
That's right. Well, again, this entire system is built around the loopholes for the trillionaires and the billionaires. That's the whole problem. And the rest of Americans are being told that you have to pay your fair share. But you look at, relatively speaking, to the billionaire, there is no fair share correspondence between what I would pay or you would pay versus, say, an Elon Musk might pay.
Yeah.
It's vastly different. Putin recognizing that is massive. I want to say President Trump recognized it. There was talk about abolishing the IRS when he came on, but we haven't heard a peep about it. There was talk about abolishing the Department of Education. They've been refunded. The things that we needed to see happen, we haven't seen happen. And I think this is going to be problematic going forward in November.
There seems to, he actually has almost gone in the wrong direction or the opposite direction, maybe because he's a man of means and he identifies with these people. But it's almost been like carte blanche for any billionaire, even if they're not the smartest guys in the world. But if you got a lot of money, you can come into the White House and sit next to the president and have a conversation. I know it's always been like that, and I shouldn't pick on Trump. But he seems to have an affinity for that kind of person.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Yeah, that to me is problematic. However, I will give him this kudo.
Yeah.
He did bring Tina Peters in.
Yeah.
He talked to her about elections, and you can't have real people running our government unless you have real elections. Now, the big defining red line for him is, will he follow her advice, which is essentially get rid of the election machines. He has all the statutory authority that he needs and codes and executive orders to do that. If he doesn't do that, he will be, again, furthering the demise of our country, because we're going to continue to get people that you and I would never ordinarily elect, people that do not have our best interests at heart. A public servant leader is somebody who listens to us. And if President Trump is not hearing us, and he's being overwhelmed on this particular subject matter, just like he's getting a lot of backlash on his position on hyperscale data centers, if he's not listening, then he never really was one of we the people. And this is the defining moment in our country right now, where we're going to find out what kind of president did we elect in 2024, because I hustled like crazy to get him over the finish line. All my friends hustled. I hustled three times to get him into the Oval Office.
The problem is the alternative could be worse. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was totally disheartened by the Biden presidency. And that's just because he's an old man and, you know, he didn't speak. No, it was beyond that. It was a complete turnover of our government to certain people who wanted to do certain things and basically abuse their positions. And I saw the same thing with Obama, and I saw the same thing with Bush. So, you know, is there even a possibility that the framework of our system allows for someone to take charge again and give this government back to the people?
Yeah, there certainly is. Again, it starts at the local level, though, Rick. You know, every state actually has, you actually have a statute on the books that allows you to do citizens' arrests. And where I'm sitting from in Florida, if Fauci were to step over the border in Florida into a county, any one of those sheriffs could arrest him based on the fact that he has been provided all the evidence to show that what he did with COVID was absolute fraud and treason on Americans. He killed millions of people around the world. 5.5 billion people taken in poison death shot. I mean, honestly, I don't know how much more egregious it can get. Nuremberg doesn't come close to what this man did. That being said, every state has this right. So if it takes one brave group of people to start making these citizen arrests, it takes one person to stand up to your county commissions and say, I don't want hyperscalers in my backyard. We're not doing it because of any number of reasons. This is where we stand.
Why don't we do that? What,
because we have...
You're an American. I'm an American. And I know that we just settle a lot in this country, more than a lot of other people around the world.
Well, again, we got very wealthy right after World War II, and it became very comfortable.
We spend all of our time consuming.
Because we consume, and we became a consumer society. And again, you export cheap dollars overseas, you can buy cheap things and bring them home. So we become a consumer society. And of course, the advertising that goes on 12, 365, you know, 7 days.
Here's the average American.
Click, click, click.
I'm sitting in front of my TV, I'm watching TV, and then I have a couple of beers, and then I have a meal, and I go to sleep.
That's right. And I work at corporate America, and they take out my W-2 earnings, and I get my 401k and my health care. And I'm happy because I have 2-car garage, I have 2 cars, I have 4 TVs, and I have a house over my head.
So we don't ask good questions. I talked about this yesterday. We don't ask good questions.
But we don't have that anymore, Rick. Talk to any child in their 20s and 30s. The average age of buying a house is north of 40 now.
Right.
So, again, the American dream, the easy pie, easy street, get a job, where it's over.
Yeah.
And this is where we're seeing the dichotomy. I still think Gen Z is probably going to be the generation that saves us from complete catastrophe because they're getting angry and more angry because they're looking at their parents going, I'm never going to have what you have, Mom and Dad.
I talked to my wife about that yesterday. You're right. We went to Sawgrass Mall yesterday. I wanted to pick some stuff up. And I was walking around the mall, and I said, oh, my God. Sawgrass. It used to be. You've been to Sawgrass, right? It's like the biggest mall in South Florida. People from all over the world come here and everything. Well, it looks sad.
It was empty.
It was empty. Yeah. The light bulbs weren't working. Stores were closing. I said, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I never imagined this would happen. I know malls close all over the United States, some of them because they shouldn't have been there anyway. But Sawgrass Mall is kind of like a pillar of the big malls in America. You know, it's always been used as a shining example of the superstore mall. It's kind of dying, too.
It is. America's dying. I drive coast to coast all the time, and I'm so saddened by what I see. I see giant windmills that look like, you know, something out of a sci-fi movie, littering beautiful landscape that should be just for cows and for growing, you know, wheat and whatever. Yeah. And then you go through the inner cities as you travel through these states, and they're just dilapidated. Every bridge I drive over over a body of water, I'm praying, please not today, don't be the day it collapses. I mean, we are in a state of massive decline. And again, you can't just say this happened overnight. This has been an architected decline. The amount of raping and pillaging being done by the federal and state governments with our tax dollars has been obscene, and they have not put any of it back into our country. And instead of investing in our country, we're now building ballrooms and we're redoing arches in Washington, D.C. I want to see that money spent back in my city. That's where I want to see the money come to.
Well, that's like I was just saying about the questions. I started my newscast yesterday talking about why we don't ask good questions anymore. I mean, and Americans need to ask when someone says, oh, we're going to go to war tomorrow with country X, whether it's Iran or Ukraine or whatever the hell next war we're fighting. Americans need to say, and what does that do for me?
Right.
And what does that do for me? And if we premised every single policy in America with what does that do for me or what does that do for the American people? And the answer is nothing, because 80% of the time the answer is nothing. If we could somehow get that back in the forefront of our leaders' thinking, we could become a great country again. But right now, that the question is not even asked.
Well, it's difficult when you start to find out that social media influencers are on the payroll of the government to push a narrative. Why we're in war. Why, you know, this is what we're fighting for. Again.
That's funny. They started with think tanks, and they did a great job with think tanks.
Yep.
And then they worked their way into the media. They control CNN. They control Fox News and all those people on cable news. And now they're going into social media and buying them as well.
Yeah, well, it's just, the pharmaceutical industry has done it as well. There's companies out there that have big pharma employed individuals who are pushing a narrative of they're all about the holistic naturopathic approach. But yet they're using the same exact model. Buy up all the social media influencers that have a big following so that you can sell your products on their platform. There's nothing has changed. It's just the individuals that are involved. And those that are susceptible to selling out for money are the ones that are going to continue to push a narrative out there that is going to continue the demise of our country. And that's going to push a narrative that, oh, that's why they're doing that. That's why we're in the war in Ukraine. I don't need to ask the question because somebody who I trust just told me.
Yeah.
And this is the game. Talk about the great game. This is another great game. And it's a game. It's the game for your mind. It's the war for your mind. An information war. I call myself that, an information war correspondent. It really is a much bigger war than people recognize.
And you're so good at it. You're so good at explaining it. It makes me angry. It must make you angry as well when you wake up in the morning and you know the facts of a story, but you go on YouTube or anywhere else or the local news or whatever, and they literally are like playing the opposite game.
That's right.
Like they'll tell you right now, Ukraine is destroying Russia. They're devastating Russia.
2 million people are dead in Russia.
Because they hit a warehouse that sells ladies' underwear.
Right.
I mean, look at that ladies' underwear store or online store, or whatever they're called, you know, blueberries or raspberries or whatever they're called, you know, just blew up. I mean, and these European idiots are like, oh, what a great thing. They blew up an online store. What does that have to do with a war?
It doesn't. It has everything to do with the fact that there's, again, another narrative that they're pushing. It's, to me, disturbing when you recognize how many of our Patriot missiles have been used for Ukraine.
We're out of them.
And we're out of them.
Oh,
by the way, who can hold us hostage to make more? China. Who has all the ability to refine all the rare earths that we need to make these devices? China. What infrastructure have we built to shore up our national security with when it comes to refining oil and refining rare earth minerals? We don't have them. We can produce all the oil in the world. We don't need Venezuelan oil. We don't need Iran's oil. We have enough right here. But yet we don't have the refining capacities.
Yeah.
That's the real story why you're paying $4 and $5 at the pump for gas and higher for diesel. The diesel crack spread just went over $100. Again, we are in a big, this is a big issue.
I went last year, Putin's there now, by the way. They're having the Shanghai summit.
Yep.
I covered that last year. As an American journalist, you know, we don't go to things like that. We think they don't matter, you know. My God, I was there with Modi and Xi and Putin. And, you know, in comes the president of Turkey and in comes the president of Iran. And then I see the guy from South Africa and some of the guys from Brazil. And I'm thinking, wow, there is more power, more money, more GDP here than there is in any of these ones that I've been celebrating as a journalist when I worked at CNN and Fox and NBC. I mean, these guys, what they're building is a very powerful coalition. And it seems to me, I don't know if you agree with me, that we're pushing them into that coalition.
Of course we are. We're pushing them into that coalition because we still somehow believe that if we keep printing, we're going to be able to somehow, and we keep going to war, we're going to be able to steal the assets and the natural resources of a country and the trade routes that that country represents to collateralize the money that we printed into an oblivion. That is, in fact, the real problem. And make no bones about it, the United States is sitting on over $200 trillion worth of in-ground assets. They are already talking about, and I believe they've put 80% of the homes in our country on the blockchain already, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
So they're trying to build a balance sheet so that they can do the rug pull when it comes to, oh, $40 trillion of debt. Yeah, we're not going to pay that because we have, this is what we're worth right here. So it really doesn't matter. Sorry that you bought all those treasuries, China, Japan, whoever.
Yeah.
You know, sorry about that. I mean, that's why we're engaging in these currency swaps with Japan. I think we're trying to keep them as a friendly. Bessent's over there pushing for that, which, okay, I understand that short-term play. But in the end, we're cutting off our nose to spite our face. We just need to do the hard, we need to make the hard admission. We've really screwed up for a long time. We've kicked the can down the road for administration since the 70s. We're going to start putting real-world assets behind a new U.S. Treasury dollar and call it a day. And we're going to cut the Federal Reserve and the international banking cabal out of our lives. That is who has a stranglehold on all. It's the same group of people that I talked about that started the City of London in 1047. They're still here, and they're still running the tables, and they're still giving us, you know, owning the media is very helpful.
How much is the Federal Reserve issue? I think the Federal Reserve should even exist.
Should not.
I don't even know. Why the hell do we have a Federal Reserve?
Well, ask Woodrow Wilson that.
Why don't we just have something that has a value, and we know what that value is based on how many people want that one thing.
Right.
And not somebody sitting there in a dark suit in a dark room somewhere saying, no, this is the value. I will assign it. That's communism.
That's right.
Yeah, that's totalitarianism.
Correct.
So who the hell are we to go around the world telling people that they shouldn't be totalitarians when we're more totalitarians than they are? And we have a system right now where no matter what president you put in there, the system doesn't change. That's called a dictatorship.
That's right.
So where are we?
We are the emperor with no clothes.
Yeah.
That's exactly where we are. We are the emperor with no clothes right now. The kimono is wide open. Everybody can see everything.
Yeah.
It's just we're standing there telling everybody we have a... We're beautifully adorned, and everything is great. And Americans, we're the greatest country in the world. And you're going to do this, and you're going to do that because it's the best thing for you, and you're stupid if you don't. I'm sorry, but that's not how you run a country. That's not how you serve your people. Yeah. There's a difference between being a public servant, and there's a difference between being just a leader. Leaders are either good or bad. And the ones you have that are just telling you what you need to hear because they think they're going to get you to go along to get along because they just don't want to deal with the hard crisis that's standing right in front of them. I mean, let me call President Trump on the carpet on this. He told us for an entire year, I'm going to make a phone call one day, the war with Ukraine is over. Okay? And here we are. Well, it was a little harder than I thought. Well, gee, do you think that perhaps maybe that the policies of our country and what we've done in the past?
Because there are people who didn't want him to do that and made sure he wasn't able to do that.
And he's surrounded by them.
And they're more powerful than he is.
That's right.
Am I wrong to say that?
No, you're not wrong.
I feel terrible saying that. I grew up thinking the president is the most important position in the world. He's the leader of the free world, the most powerful man in the world. And now, at my ripe old age, I've realized the president is nobody in our country. Obama didn't do anything. I mean, talk to my friend Kerryaku. He'll tell you he was owned.
Mm-hmm.
He was owned by the establishment. So was Clinton. Mm-hmm. So was Bush. Bush more than most.
Aren't they all kind of handpicked in some form or fashion?
I mean, they're put there.
They're put there. I think they're all just put there to further...
You think Trump was put there?
I do. I think he was actually put there. I think
First time or second time?
I think all of them. I think we were at that point where they knew the currency was at expiration date, and they needed somebody to rally everybody, to make everybody feel really good about one individual. Then we went through this horrific loss, and we had to survive Biden, and we were all... And, of course, this is in the extenuating circumstances of a timeline of getting to the currency extinction right now and running it up to $40 trillion. And, you know, we're very close to the breaking point.
Yeah.
And so he has to be here now because they believe that Americans will continue to rally around Trump, which is why you're seeing on social media so many of these giant influencers. If you speak out against Trump, you're anti-American.
But...
Excuse me?
But his numbers are at 33% when last I looked.
That's right.
That's a terrible approval rate.
It's almost an indictment.
He's almost Biden-esque at this point.
It's an indictment on the policies that his administration is putting forth. Whether he's in agreement with them or not, he's pushing them forward. And to see him go after Americans and call us panickins, and the Epstein stuff is not a big deal when his administration brought it to the forefront with Pam Bondi almost day one. And to see where we are in terms of, you know, the mind meld, the 5GW.
Yeah, and I think everything you're saying, I bet you he knows.
I'm sure he knows.
I know he probably sits around at night and says, how the hell did I get myself in this situation? And I think I heard him recently blaming Bibi. And he said...
He's probably not too far wrong.
Yeah. do you think Bibi's the one who got him into this mess? Do you think the Iran thing was the catalyst that has kind of made everybody look at the emperor and think maybe he doesn't have any clothes on?
Well, I think Bibi is the puppet of the central bankers in London, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, again, you look at...
It's funny, you keep going back to the central bankers in London. I hear you say that now. Yeah. And it's jiving with all the things that I've been... In the last year, I've become more of a global correspondent than I ever was here. Mm-hmm. So I talk to people around the world, and I see that everything points back to London.
It does.
And it's this tiny little country, really, comparatively
speaking. One square mile. The city of London is one square mile.
And they don't have resources. They don't have anything. They just have control of the money supply.
They do. That's it. And it does come back down to control of the money supply. But again, it's a money supply that's made up of nothing.
Damn.
It's made up of nothing, Rick.
And you are a delight to talk to.
Thank you.
Can we do this again?
I'd love to.
I mean, I really, really enjoy talking to you.
Yeah,
you're so smart, and you have such interesting ideas, and you're cogent. You could tell that you've thought through this information. and worked on it. So where, people want to check in with you or call you or look at you or whatever. How do they do that?
Just easiest way is AnnVanderSteel.com. All my social media there is linked easily.
Okay, so and you're on Rumble?
X, Rumble, YouTube. Yeah. If, you know, YouTube keeps kicking me off.
Yeah, me
X
too.
And, X and Rumble are the best places. Facebook as well. So.
Oh God.
Even True Social.
I know that story only too well.
Yeah.
And VanderSteel, thanks so much for being
Thank
with
you.
Us. You're fabulous. You
Thank
really
you.
Are. Great conversation. I really enjoyed it. So smart. And that's it for us. Thanks so much for being with us. By the way, you can also find me on X and Spotify. And I keep appearing on YouTube and then reappearing on YouTube. It's funny the way that works, by the way. So, listen, thanks so much for being with us. We're going to play some of my conversation with Ann on all of those places. Let us know what you think. And perhaps most importantly, I always like to say this because I think it's important. Thank you so much for letting us into your homes. I really appreciate it, and I'll be looking for you next time. We'll see you then.